Good morning, everybody. The title of my talk today is 29 Things I Learned in Japan. And I was lucky enough to be able to go to Japan recently. I got back a week ago. Ben and Kato also made the trip. And a number of people have said they'd like to hear more about the trip. So I thought I'd show some photos this morning. And it should be fun. So there are 29 things. And are we ready to put up the first photo?
I think so. Can you give me a second to share the screen?
Okay. Special thanks to Phil and to Mark for helping me with the tech. So, thing number one, it's best not to be too quick to know anything. I tried to take good photos on this trip, nice balanced photos. But I deliberately chose a photo that's a little off for my first photo. And it seems a little off to me. What is this thing jutting out of these red leaves here? And I think it kind of symbolizes that we don't always know what we're looking at. And this was my first trip to Japan, and I was there for about 2.5 weeks. Some of you have been in Japan, and some of you for much longer than I have. So what I saw and what I concluded about it are necessarily a little superficial. And I'm sure I've missed some nuances. And I don't want to make uninformed generalizations. So please take this for what it's worth. We're always learning and becoming. We never get there. So that is actually a rock taken at a weird angle near a wisteria. Okay, next photo, please. Okay, so we have 28 more things, so we have to keep moving here. This is a banner outside of Sojiji Monastery in Yokohama. And I'm so grateful to the International Center of Soto Zen Buddhism North America, which put this thing on. They welcomed people from around the world, Soto Zen Buddhists. I think maybe 120, maybe 150, and they came to Japan to commemorate Keizan Zenji's 700th anniversary. And I did a talk on Keizan 4 weeks ago. He and Dogen are seen by some as the mother and father of Zen. And Keizan was a sangha builder, and he is sometimes overlooked. It was nice to learn more about him and to honor him on this trip. So this banner has a picture of him, and it's at the entrance to Sojiji, which was his temple, which is now located in Yokohama. So next, please. We can skip that one. That's the same view, basically. Number three, Tokyo is a beautiful city. It is incredibly clean and efficient. And where I was, basically the city was on three different levels. There was an underground level, there was street level, and then there was this very elaborate level of pedestrian walkways. And next, please. There's a very elaborate system of these yellow strips with bumps, which are for sight-impaired people to use. And it's really very impressive. Next. And this is just a nice view of Tokyo. Those are some gardens near our hotel where we walked around, and a bridge over a river there, and some distant buildings. And next, this is a view. I hope you can see that really clearly. Well, it's pretty good. This is a view from the 42nd floor. We were there on our last night of our trip. And it is such a big city. It is such a vast city. I think there are 38 million people in this metro area, maybe the largest metro area on Earth. And, you know, there's something very humbling about it. It's kind of like looking at great mountains. You just kind of feel your own insignificance. And seeing so many buildings around you, knowing that there are so many people, is really quite humbling. And one would hope that that feeling of insignificance would lead to more devotion to the common good, as opposed to an individual and defensive sort of stance. And in Japan, there does seem to be a great deal of devotion to the common good, which I think is really beautiful. Number four, timing is important. This is one of the, this is a famous intersection. I've seen this intersection in various movies. And at night, this is in the Ginza shopping district in Tokyo. And at night, it's really lit up very extensively. And there are many, many people walking in these crosswalks. But timing is important. We went there on Sunday morning, very quiet, and not many sightings. Number five, it's fun to see your friends in distant places. Here I am with Ben in his neighborhood in Tokyo, which was the Roppongi neighborhood. And we had dinner with my wife, Kathy, at this little restaurant that specialized in dumplings. And it was really good. Number six, if you ever go to Kyoto, you must walk the Philosopher's Path. That's a path which extends about 2 kilometers, and it's behind a very, it's beside a very small canal. And there are many temples and shrines along the way. And this was actually the first shrine that I encountered in Japan. And it was a pretty small one. And I lit a stick of incense, and I dropped a coin in the coin box, and I made a wish for someone whom I really care about, who lives in Japan and is having some difficulties. Next, here are some stone Jizos. Jizo, the Bodhisattva of hell beings, the guardian of children, including deceased children. You see Jizo statues all over Japan, and some of them are, sculpted or cast, and some of them are simply rocks with sometimes hats and sometimes these little articles of clothing on them. And I think these may honor specific children who have been lost, and it was very moving to see these everywhere. So most of this trip I spent with my wife, Kathy. I was with the Soto Zen group for 3 days, and the rest of the time it was us. And here she is walking along the Philosopher's Path. We went there very early in the morning, and there were hardly any people, and it was just very beautiful. Next, I just really like this picture. That's on the path, and these are some green maple leaves. It was spring there. Spring was a little bit ahead of our spring, and there's a reflection in the water there. And next, this is probably the smallest enclosed shrine I saw. It was just tiny, and it's this homemade Buddha with some homemade clothing, and somebody has put some flowers there, and somebody has left some little coin offerings, and it was really tiny. And it's lovely to see these tiny shrines all over the place. Although there were smaller sidewalk shrines, which would be up next to a building, and they were about this tall and about this wide, just a little collection of things there. So, number seven, language is no barrier. So we kept having great interactions with people, even though we spoke no Japanese. You know, we knew about 5 words each, and a lot of the people we interacted with spoke no English, but we seemed to communicate really well. And this is at a flea market in Kyoto. We were there with Kato, and Kathy bought some paintings from this guy, some old paintings, World War II era paintings that were painted by a person in Osaka. And it was quite a negotiation, and it went on for quite a long time. and they didn't speak the same language, and people came by and they would help to translate, and she drew quite a crowd. And during the negotiations, he was really quite businesslike and a little tense, but once it was all over, he was just really happy. I love this picture. And then next is, this is Kathy and a waitress named Aiko, who was one of the most joyous people I've ever met. We kept going back to her place to see her, and she was just the bodhisattva waitress. And then next, this is me with two folks in a barber shop. I decided to go full bald for the ceremonies. You know, before I left, I left my hair pretty short like that, but I decided I would just go all the way. So we dropped into a barber shop, and neither of these folks spoke English, but we communicated a lot with the aid of one of those little translating devices, you know. Mm-hmm. And Kathy was there, and she was taking pictures, and it was definitely the most fun haircut I've ever gotten. So this, number 8, connections run deep between the U.S. and Japan when it comes to Soto Zen. This is Kato and me and Mr. Matsu Motoya at the Soto Zen store in Kyoto. Soto Zen store in Kyoto translates for me as paradise. I bought a besu, I bought two jubans, I bought a bright yellow wrapping cloth for my robes, I bought some gifts, Kato got some stuff, he served as tea afterwards, and it was just really nice. We felt just really really connected, and it was quite joyful. And he showed us something. The next slide, please. So he brought out this collage he had made. Great customers and friends around the world of Matsu Motoya. And these are pictures of American practitioners and other countries too, of Soto Zen that he's had interactions with. And Kato and I looked at this. We found all kinds of people we know. Kato even found himself in one of the pictures from a gathering in Sonoma. So it just felt like a really nice moment to know that these connections exist. Number 9, Keninji Temple was a very important part of Dogen's life. It was really quite a coincidence that we found a hotel in Kyoto just based on what looked like a nice neighborhood. And it happened that Keninji Temple was right across the street from our hotel. And I saw the name Keninji Temple, and I thought, that sounds really familiar. Where have I heard that? Well, that's where Dogen studied with his teacher Miyozen from 1217 to 1223. It's a Rinzai temple. And Dogen returned from China and then again came to this temple. And that's where he wrote the Fukan Zazengi, I believe. And it's a beautiful place. It was the first large temple that we toured in Japan. And there are many beautiful buildings. There are some incredible dragons up on the ceiling of the main hall. And there are lots of Zen gardens, which are very carefully tended. So there I am contemplating the garden. And then next, this is an interior shot of an altar in one of the buildings. And you can see a little bit of the dragons on the ceiling up there. And altars in these temples tend to be really quite elaborate, but really, really no different from ours. They tend to have a bowing cloth in front of them, and they'll have a Shakyamuni Buddha or some other figure, and they have offerings the way we have offerings of candles and lavender buds instead of incense. Number 10, simple work is valued everywhere in Soto Zen. So I spied this room in a corner, and I saw monks there at Kininji weeding, pulling little tiny weeds. They look very happy. I wanted to join them because that's one of my favorite activities. And then next, when we got to Aheiji, I'll talk about Aheiji in a little bit. This is kind of an advanced look. We weren't supposed to take pictures of the monks, but I did get, you could see just a little bit of red up in the corner there. That is a monk's glove, and he's holding a broom. I thought it'd be okay if I took a picture just of his glove. And what he's doing is he's sweeping the moss. There's moss everywhere at Aheiji. There's really not grass, and little sticks and things fall on the moss, and they keep it clean. So they give it incredible, tender air. And I thought throughout Japan, in secular life as well, there tends to be just great care, taking care of small things. Number 10, this is from Kininji. You can cut wood to fit a stone, the way Killian did with our gate here, or you can cut the stone to fit the wood. And that's what happened here. And this temple was founded in, I think, around 1200. So this may be very, very old. Number 11. So the founder of Kininji, his name was Eisei, and he is known as the father of Japanese tea culture. And I put this one in for Kato, so father of tea and the tea ceremony. So he brought back tea to Japan, or at least was the one to really promote it. And this is a tea plant here, which probably won't be actually used for making tea. But under this cover, it's kind of a, you know, there's strips of a reed-like something. There is tea under that, and they need to shade it from the sun. And that's special tea that will be used for the tea ceremony. Number 12, sometimes people taking pictures is as interesting as the thing they're taking of. But lest I get too judgy, I was taking a picture too. But I think it's kind of funny. It's so easy to get distracted by the urge to take pictures of things, and you start missing things. So I was kind of, you know, aware of that the entire time. Number 13. We took a train from Tokyo to Kyoto, and this is taken out the window of a train, and that is a rice field there. You can see another rice field in the background. I wish I'd gotten better pictures of rice fields, but maybe I'll do that next time. But thing number 13 is the rice fields really are like the rakusu, because if you sewed a rakusu or looked at one closely, you may have been told, you know, the Buddha was out walking with Ananda one day, and the Buddha said, wouldn't it be nice if our robes looked like the rice fields? And so we have this little rectangle up here, and the other rectangles moving out from it are layered, kind of like shingles, so the water can run off. And I've been told that's how the rice fields are. It goes, you know, the water goes into one rice field, and that drains into the next rice field and into the next one, and that's how they all keep water in them. And I was able to see them up somewhat close, and I see they really are like that. You know, one rice field will be at this level, and the next one might be just a few inches lower, and the next one a few inches lower than that. And that was really nice to see that up close. Number 13, you never know how it's going to be. So you can drop your expectations. And this is just inside the gates to Aheiji, which was the temple founded by Dogen in the 1200s. And I actually went there twice. I was scheduled to go there with the Soto Zen group, but I went there the previous day with Kathy because she really wanted to see Aheiji. So we went out there, just the two of us. And I didn't have any particular expectations about anything at Aheiji. I did catch myself when I was meditating with the group at Aheiji thinking, this should be a really special meditation. Because I'm meditating at Aheiji. This should be some kind of peak experience. That didn't happen. It was ordinary meditation. It was going inside and what's going on here? And, oh my goodness, look at that. And kind of watching things go on. And it was a little different because it was Aheiji things going on. But it was still just kind of an ordinary meditation. And the same thing happened at Sojiji, that I thought maybe it should be really special. And it was really quite ordinary. But you never know what's going to happen. I walked into Aheiji and I saw these massive trees and the moss and the rocks and the light. And the photo doesn't do it justice. I walked in there and I just started crying. I started crying because, I don't know, it just made me so emotional. I think I never believed that I would get to go to this place in my lifetime. I mean, this is the most special place I can think of to go, except maybe the places where the Buddha actually walked and taught. And it was so wonderful to be there. And Kathy saw how I was reacting, and she was quite moved by it, and it was a nice moment for us together. So you never know. You never know how things are going to. So next, I didn't take that many pictures at Aheiji. I wish I had taken more so I could show them to you, but I didn't want to be sort of carried away by trying to capture and keep things. I wanted to just have the experience. So, but this is one picture of another altar, and you can see the bowing mat. And they have so many things there that are similar to what we have, you know, so many of the instruments. It's like you see the mokugyos everywhere, and our mokugyo is about this big. There was a mokugyo at Sojiji, which was, it stood about this tall, and you hit it with a mallet that is the size of a sledgehammer. It's deeply resonant. That was pretty cool. And we were walking through Aheiji. It's very vertical because it's in this sort of little mountain valley, and there are many, many steps, and they give you slippers to wear. Kind of hard to, it's hard not to fall out of the slippers on those steps, so you have to be pretty mindful. And we came to a place where we could hear monks chanting and found that it was a hall devoted to Jizo, and they were doing memorial services there. And I was very, very moved by that as well. And we went to Founders Hall. So the Founders Hall at Aheiji contains Dogen's ashes. And the teachers were allowed to go in and do three prostrations to Dogen. And that was really wonderful as well. Just felt, you know, like this is a pilgrimage. This is a pilgrimage. I'm paying my respects. It was really lovely. So next, number 14, do not try to iron a kuromo and a kimono on one of these. It's not going to work. What you do is you put towels on the floor of your tiny hotel room and you iron it there. This was in Fukui just before we joined the group. Number 15, it is really, really fun to see your friends in distant places. So this is Kat and Kato And yes, they're at McDonald's. Don't get judgy. And this is next. Ted and Tazon from Wisconsin. And next, this is Ted and Inryu from DC. And next, Minnesotans seem to really like Japan. This is Kato. He's taking the photo. And me and Mio and Susan Hagler, who many of you know, and Ben. And we had just all gotten together and we're seeing a lot of friends from around the country. And we were very excited and very fresh. And 3 days later, after traveling all the way across Japan by train and bus and getting up at 3:20 in the morning for some fairly serious monastic practice, we didn't look quite as fresh. We were just as happy, but a little jaggled. Number 16, it is awesome to practice at a Heiji. So that day I went back to a Heiji with the group, and this is just our group, which included both priests and lay people, and we're lined up just ready to go into the gate there. And there was a welcome, there was a tour, there was a lecture, and we got to do about a half hour of Zazen there at AAG. Number 17, there is a great need still for earthquake relief. So we stayed in Kanazawa that first night with the group. This is a view from the our hotel in Kanazawa. It's a mountainous area. And this is very near the Noto Peninsula, where there was an earthquake on January 1st. You may remember hearing about that. And actually our hotel, I think, was a 7-story hotel. I think 3 or 4 of the floors were filled with earthquake evacuees. And so we all contributed some cash to the earthquake relief fund. There was a charity bazaar at the Soto Zen headquarters. We took some 50th anniversary MZMC t-shirts there to sell. I like the idea of thinking our t-shirts may be who knows where around the world right now. Number 18, it's awesome to practice at Sojiji. So that temple is in Yokohama. When Keizan founded it, it was in Western Japan, but after a big fire in, I think, the 1800s, they moved it to Yokohama. And it's in the middle of an urban area, and it's big with a lot of buildings. And we got a taste of the monk's life in Japan. I kind of felt like I was in the position of being a novice. Was kind of good for me because I really didn't know what I was doing half the time. And so this is just one of the buildings at Sojiji. Next, this similarly to the hall at Heiji, this is an altar dedicated to Jizo. And this is a place where they did memorial services for the laity. And next, we see in this hall, there were literally thousands of memorial tablets for people who they've done services for over hundreds of years. And we talked to one monk who said, I think that he does 13 memorial services a day. So it was really nice to see that, you know, the laity is involved at these big temples, and not just as tourists, but, you know, there's a lot of support for the laity, and I thought that was really a beautiful thing, and I was moved by that. So next, this is a Han. So many of the things they have are similar to ours. Next, I took this photo during the day, the first day we got there when we had a tour. But then the next morning, we walked here in the darkness. And This hallway, it's a very long hallway, and you can see maybe that the floor is really shiny. You may have seen how monks wash the floors in Japan in monasteries. They have a wooden block, maybe with a towel around it, and they get down like this and they run with the block. It's not easy to do. And they said that they've been cleaning this floor this way twice a day for about 100 years, and it's really shiny. So we slept in a really large room on the floor. The wake-up bell was at 3:20. We got dressed and walked pretty far and pretty fast to the meditation hall. And we had Zazen at 4:00. And next, please. This is where we did Zazen on these raised platforms, which is the traditional way of doing it in Japan. And next, in this hall, this is a little hard to see, but this is Canon with her many, many arms and different implements in each arm, which allows her to better assist all the beings of the world. And so after Zazen, we went to this place. This is a great hall. This is the largest hall for Buddhist practice in all of Japan. It is enormous. And we came here for 2 hours of ceremonies, really indescribable, intricate, beautiful. We were involved in them. We offered incense. We did a lot of prostrations. Mm. There was the morning service and then two very lengthy ceremonies devoted to the Keizan anniversary. And it was wonderful and moving and grueling. And then we had a break and then we went back and did it again. So number 19, back in Tokyo, suddenly I realized that until now, sitting in standard chairs in this country, my feet have never really fully touched the floor. And in Japan, things are proportioned for me. It's really nice. It's really nice. Number 20, don't get complacent. This is me on the railway platform. Note slots for hearing impaired people and the very careful organization about where you are to stand. This is just after I said, I think we've finally gotten this railroad thing down. And just before I realized we were in the wrong place and we missed our train. But this being Japan, we caught another one in 45 minutes. So no big harm done. Number 21, if my calculations are correct, you can see Mount Fuji in this way from 70 miles away. This was on the train from Tokyo to Nikko, which is about, maybe 50 miles north of Tokyo. Caught a glimpse of it. Did not catch a glimpse of it up close when going across the country. Did you see it, Kato?
I finally saw it on the last day.
You did.
From the trigger.
Fuji-san. Number 22. It is so much fun to be welcomed with a sign at the train station. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to be one of those people. But now it's happened. Kathy, Ted, welcome to Tochigi. Because we have a family connection in Japan, because Kathy lived with a student from Japan for 6 years when she was going to school over here. She lived with Kathy. And so they're really close. They hadn't seen each other for 20 years. And so we went to see her, went to see the whole family. They were just incredible, wonderful, lovely people. Only Mika spoke English, but we got along well. We really had a lot of fun. And next slide, please. And the first order of business was for Kathy to pick out a style of dress she wanted to be made from old kimonos, which is a thing that people do. And so we went to this seamstress's house, and I had to include this one for Cato and Rosemary especially. This is the seamstress's work area. It's just delightfully organized, but a little chaotic. And next. And this is the seamstress, and she's 92 years old. And that was a fun experience. And they also gave Kathy four other dresses besides the one Kathy made for her. The gift giving is a huge thing in Japan. We brought a lot of gifts over and a lot of gifts back. Okay, let's see. Where are we? Yes, next. Number 24, beware of land leeches. Number 25. In Nikko at the hotel, I just found like the best writing desk I've found in my life. It was like perfect. I was there at 5 a.m. There's this beautiful view. You can see the mountain there. Mountains still had a little snow on them. It's just like old-fashioned desk. So that was cool. Number 26. So I took a long walk in Nikko in an old growth forest. And it was about a 4-hour walk. There were trees there 300, 400, even 500 years old. Shrines and temples all along the way. It was kind of an organized, I had like a little guide paper telling me where to go. And I got lost frequently, but I did end up seeing all of these shrines and things. And this is a little shrine here. A Shinto shrine, you can see, because there's a torii there. And that tree is a cedar tree, which is estimated to be 550 years old. And it was just so beautiful. And next is, this is just a small shrine. Not sure what's going on there, but pretty cool. Next, I'm not sure just what these are, but they have little holes in them. And I did see a wren going into one of the holes. I think maybe it lived in there. But, you know, the moss just adds a layer of beauty to everything. And next. It's just really, I think, impossible to convey with a photograph the beauty of these ancient trees and the paths among them. So I think with this 4-hour walk, I feel like I really kind of got the place into my bones. And next, please. I really love this photo. This was toward the end of my walk. It kind of represents the path ahead for me. The path ahead may not be easy. It's going to be uphill. I love the way that one little step has out of place. It's been lifted up by the tree. And, I had some time to reflect because my trip to Japan was coming to an end. I had been on this long walk. I was alone. And I had a little time to kind of reflect on my life. It just kind of came naturally, and I did. And there was nothing too profound or too new. But what I really felt was, I just want to keep doing what I'm doing because I'm so happy with what I'm doing here with the Sangha and what I'm doing with my family. And I want to, take good care of myself so that I'm able to do that. So I felt grateful that I had that kind of clarity. And I was really excited about coming back. I missed you all a great deal. I missed MZMC. I was able to, when you get far away, maybe you have some perspective. And I just felt really good about everything we're doing. Number 28, I want to go back. this is a street, there's kind of one main street in Nikko, which is a pretty small town next to Nikko National Park. And you can see the mountains there. And I wonder, if I go back, could I climb one of those mountains? Or maybe, you know, part way? I would love to do that. And I would really encourage anyone who is able to and has the good fortune to do so to go to Japan. You know, I kind of wish I hadn't waited so long to do it myself. It's such a beautiful country. The people are so beautiful. I had heard from some people that it's a hard trip to make. I don't think that's true. I think things went really smoothly. Things run so well there. People are so helpful. And it just didn't seem that difficult. And it was remarkable how comfortable we felt there after a pretty short time. I mean, we were novices. We didn't know what to do. We made mistakes all the time. People took it in good humor. People were bowing all the time. You know, with Zen folks, you do this. And there's kind of secular bow people do all the time. It just came really natural. I love that bow. I like the way people are quiet. I like the way they relate to each other. So I would encourage folks to go if you can. And we do have some connections in Japan for people who wish to practice there. It is possible to go to monasteries and spend some time. So number 29 and last. This is wisteria. Mika wanted us to see wisteria. We got there kind of late in the cherry blossom season, so we didn't see so many cherry blossoms, but the wisteria was just in bloom. And it's really beautiful. It hangs down and, you know, the older flowers are completely open and these are yet to open, kind of like bleeding hearts, kind of progressively smaller blossoms. And wisteria is a symbol of humility and reflection in Shin Buddhism. And one would hope that I approach this trip with some humility. I have a strong awareness of my good fortune and the privilege that made this possible. And I know not everyone has that privilege. Not everyone enjoys, you know, the good health and just the circumstances to be able to do this. And I feel incredible gratitude to our hosts, the Soto Zen folks, to Kato and Ben for coming along. And especially this Sangha for supporting me in my practice. And last slide. So I didn't really know what wisteria was. This is a pink wisteria. And as it turns out, it's this ancient gnarled tree, and someone has built this entire framework to support the blossoms. So we have this large network of blossoms hanging down. And I thought that maybe this is kind of a metaphor for my trip. The ancient tree makes me think of our roots in Japan that go back 800 years, and China and India before that. The support structure makes me think of the support we give each other in the Sangha. We've built a structure to hold each other up. And with so many blossoms coming from one trunk, I think of the one and the many. I think of form and emptiness, difference and unity. And I think we can all blossom, every one of us, and it is beautiful. And being there, I felt like, you know, I feel like we're doing just what we need to do here. I didn't come back from Japan thinking, oh, we got to start practicing like they do in Japan. You know, we got to tighten up, have better forms to our ceremonies. I don't think so. I think We are, you know, preserving the practice. We go to the heart of the practice and we're doing real Zen here. And we're honoring the forms while adapting the forms to our own situation. So I just feel really, really good about what we're doing here. And that was my dream. Thank you for indulging me as I show you the photos. So we have a few minutes here if anyone has any questions or thoughts, criticisms, dissent.
I just wanted to say, with when I lived in Tokyo, you could never see Mount Fuji from Tokyo because of the smog.
Oh,
it's just horrible that it's 1970s. And they were doing heavy. It was only 24 years after the war, so they had done a remarkable job of rebuilding their cities and developing their industry. But then the downside was that they didn't think about pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So the rivers were very, very polluted in Tokyo. I mean, the smog was terrible. But then on New Year's, they would close all the factories for like some of the boats for 5 days. And I remember going to visit my friend in the northern part of Tokyo and staying with her over New Year's. And we went up on the river for a part where we could see Mount Fuji.
Ah.
We realized, oh, it's not that far away.
Yeah.
So it just makes my heart feel so good that, you know, they cleaned it up so much. And that makes it, I mean, the city looks very different than when I lived there.
Mm.
So that makes me feel good that they recognize that. And also recognizing disabilities was something that never happened. People kind of hid disabilities when I lived there, that they would be cognizant of the need for providing special walkways for people who are not even seeing or couldn't see or with mobility. So that just makes me feel good.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Martin. Yes, Raymond.
What was the food like?
The food was fantastic. I just, you know, our breakfast every day, we ate in hotels where we stayed. And breakfast, you would have 20 to 30 different little dishes. And a lot of things that I'm not used to, and a great variety and really exciting tastes. A lot of seafood, you know, pickles, different kinds of vegetables. It was really lovely. And we'd go out and we'd get tempura or udons or things like that. And I just couldn't get enough of it. So anyone online have a question or a comment? Or anyone else in the room? Yes, Steve.
Did you get a sense of Dogen in Japan? Any more than you'd had a sense of Dogen in Japan and here in America?
When I went to Kaninji, I didn't see anything about Dogen. They had a giant Bodhidharma portrait, but not Dogen. At Aheiji, I don't recall seeing pictures of Dogen, but I don't know. You know, I'm still assessing all of this. I've been back for a week, and it's still sinking in. But I think something about being at Aheiji, I think it made me understand the practice in a more visceral way, more in my bones. But it would be really hard for me to describe what it was.
Judy has her hand up.
Judy.
Hi. Oh, thank you so much for sharing this online. It is incredible. I'm just very grateful. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad you liked it. I've been really looking forward to this. You can tell, I'm a little excited. Usually I talk more slowly. Hey.
So you have to tell us more about land leeches.
Yeah, I saw the sign. It said, "Beware of land leeches. If you get a land leech, do not try to remove it. Come to us, and insecticides are available." So it looked a little scary. It was a bright yellow. But I never saw any, and I was walking in the woods for those 4 hours. I never got anything. It just clicked. I thought it was kind of funny. I still didn't get one. It's not so funny, but that's all I know about this. But they're big. Okay, anything else before we wrap up? Okay, we'll stop there then. Thank you so much.